Welcome to Hope Talks, where we share inspiring stories of hope in Jesus Christ. Hope Talks is hosted by Pastor Margaret Michael and Grayson Willis. Join us for uplifting stories of triumph, faith, and the enduring power of Christ's love. Also, if you're in the listening area, tune in to 1470 AM or 102.1 FM WBTX to listen to Hope Talks every Sunday at noon.
Welcome to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. I'm Grayson Willis.
And I'm Pastor Margaret Michael.
Thanks for tuning in. And today we have a special guest with us, actually a returning guest. This is long overdue, but we have Pastor Kevin Griffin with us today. How are you doing today, Pastor Kevin?
I'm great. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
He's not only our guest, he's our boss.
He's our boss.
So this needs to go well.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
It is great to have you with us today. And so I would love to just start out finding out a little bit about where you grew up, what that was like for you. Church as a young boy. I'm guessing that you were in church.
I was. So I was born in Baltimore, Maryland. I don't remember that part of the journey. I do remember being a young kid in South Jersey. People joke that there's two parts of New Jersey. One is a suburb of New York. The other is a suburb of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So I was in southern New Jersey, and my dad was a pastor at a Nazarene church in South Jersey in Northfield. And I remember being a kid there, and I remember the day that my mom said, "Hey, your dad's being called to another church in Pennsylvania." And she said, "They actually have two houses. We would get to pick one of them." I vividly remember standing in the kitchen, and she said, "One has a fireplace and the other does not. Which would you like to live in?" And I was like, we need the fireplace, you know? So starting in first grade, we moved to Westchester, Pennsylvania, which is just about 25 miles west of Philadelphia, and stayed there all the way through high school. And then we moved to Delaware, and I came to college in Virginia, and that seems like maybe a couple weeks ago, and the time has flown since. But yeah, most of my life was in southeastern Pennsylvania.
Okay.
You mentioned that your dad was a pastor, so we know you grew up in church. If you're a pastor's son, I can speak from experience. So what was that like growing up in the home of a pastor's family?
You know, it's funny. Early on, you don't know any different than any normal kid. You just knew that we're going to church a lot, but nothing else for me. I remember in elementary school not thinking anything different from what my dad. You just thought it was a job. Like some kids, their dad worked at Wawa or Walmart or somewhere else. My dad worked at the church. And so it wasn't until I probably got into middle school and early high school, I remember having thoughts that this is different. This is not a job. And he deals with things different than what a outside the church job would look like. And they would just be random thoughts. And then when kids found out that your dad was a pastor, I got made fun of a lot because of that. You know, does your dad ever get in fights? Does your dad? So I wasn't persecuted, but it was definitely different for sure. There was a pressure outside the world. And then there was a pressure in the church because, well, your dad's the pastor. And so there was these two unique things that I remember dealing with growing up.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, talking about the struggle inside the church, it's like you're either under a microscope or under a magnifying glass or a spotlight all at the same time.
And I didn't always handle that well. I have an older brother. He's 5 years older than me. He was a straight-A student, much quieter, more compliant, I'll say it that way, than what I was. And so I tended to want to push those boundaries and love my parents, was very respectful. I wasn't, you know, out doing crazy, crazy stuff. But I remember the tension of that. And I remember my mom and dad saying, "Hey, there's an expectation on us." And that was a rare thing. I think they really tried hard to just raise us as two kids who didn't feel the weight of that, and yet I saw them deal with the weight of it.
Right. Yeah.
I know that it must not have been too bad because you're still in the church.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah, can I speak to that?
Church. Yeah, I would love for you to.
So I think I get frustrated when I understand that church hurt is real. I hear that. And I acknowledge that. But I saw my parents at different points in their life take a beating. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful that God gave me the grace to never hold it against the church.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
There was at no point ever in me that I thought, I'm going to walk away from all of this.
Yeah.
I just didn't. And there were moments of frustration where I wanted to say things to people in the church who would accuse, in particular my dad, of things that I knew were not true. And he was not perfect by any stretch. But I knew behind closed doors that my dad was the man that he preached and professed to be. And it was hard to listen to people say those things. So thank God that he spared me from that and that I never pointed my finger, got angry, and blamed the church. I just knew these are just people.
Yeah. That's true. And, you know, I think it speaks volumes when under that scrutiny that your parents showed Christ. I mean, you know, what happens inside that home has a lot to do with, is the pastor the same there as he is in the pulpit on Sunday? And kids tend to see those things, but it's beautiful just to hear how you had that model for you.
I think they tried very hard to shield me from conversations that would paint the church in a bad light, even though I knew that there were hard meetings. I do remember one particular night, and he came home, and he had a really hard meeting, and I mean, this sounds silly, right? But he had been criticized for using his left hand too much. And I remember my mom saying, I wasn't in the room, I heard this. She said, well, you're left-handed. So I'm sure there were other things, right? But I remember thinking, oh my word, these people are, that sounds pretty petty.
Yeah.
But I'm really, really grateful that my parents never left the church. That was the thing.
Yeah.
You know, they had every right with some of the things they were accused of and didn't necessarily respond to. And so I watched that model. I mean, they gave their life for the church and for God. And for me to see that model and say, well, they didn't walk away. I know they're the real deal, but they didn't limp away, you know?
They weren't doing it for, they was doing that for the Lord.
That's right.
They had a calling on their life to serve the Lord in that place. If they didn't feel like that had been take it away, that they were still called there, they stayed. You know? That's powerful. So you went through high school, went to college, and you went to college where?
So I went to Eastern Mennonite University. It was Eastern Mennonite College back then, which shows how old I am. And I was an education major, health and physical education. And so I said that right from the beginning. I don't know where it was, but I just knew that I wanted to be involved in education. I loved kids. I loved learning. And I loved having weekends and summers off, too. So, which is funny because now I do the opposite.
Right.
So once I graduated from there, I got a teaching job literally the week that I graduated, which was wild. And I've taught in public school. I taught in private school. And, it was great. I taught in several different states. And I loved teaching and I loved the relationships with the kids. And my class was different. For the most part, as a phys ed teacher, most of the kids walked in your class and wanted to be there. I didn't assign homework. It wasn't so that was also a blessing too. I knew that I had an advantage and I could, you know, just, I had a little different voice than some of my colleagues did.
So you transitioned from there. What was your next role?
So I left education on a professional level in, and then I went to be a college basketball coach. And that was back at Eastern Mennonite. And I did that for 13 years. And during that time, I got my master's in education. And so again, that was, you know, the gymnasium was a classroom to me, but it was also just a different avenue to try to impact young kids' lives for Christ. And basketball was just the tool to do that. And the Lord, you know, he really helped us. And that's when we moved to Virginia. We moved here. My wife and I moved here. Our daughter was 3 months old. So we essentially raised our family starting right from the very beginning when I was doing that as a career, but also trying to figure out what's it look like to be a new husband and a new father.
So you talked about the classroom, the gymnasium, being a mission field talk about that.
I remember the conversation when I was leaving public school to go to Eastern Mennonite, back to go to coaching, and I said to a friend of mine, I feel like I'm leaving the mission field. Like I felt like I had a great influence in the town and the school where I was teaching and coaching, and that was public school. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go back to a Christian college. And I remember saying to a friend of mine, man, I don't know. I feel like I'm leaving the mission field. And he laughed and he said, so you think everybody here is a Christian? And do you think all the kids you're going to recruit are Christians? And I just went, okay. And that was, that was a clarity moment for me to say, okay, I'm going to walk back into an environment. In some cases, those kids had been in church their whole lives or from a Christian background, and they were rejecting it. In other cases, we recruited kids that weren't Christians. I saw basketball as the tool to try to impact kids' lives for the future, spiritually, spiritual formation moments.
Well, and I know that that was a reality because I just remember the years of you being there and walking in on Sunday morning, and there was usually some students
right
that were hanging with your family.
Yeah, and some of that was just because Ruthie and I just took them out to lunch afterwards, right? Mm-hmm. But just built relationship with them and tried to be, we didn't try to overdo this, but we welcomed it and we invited kids that if you want to be a part of our family, you can mm-hmm. be a part of our family.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they ate in our home. We took them out to eat. You know, we just tried to love on them.
Yeah.
And part of that love was, hey, you guys want to go to church with us?
Yeah. Right.
And we knew the impact it was having on our lives.
Yeah.
So we thought, well, this is a great environment. Let's just get them in a church environment, get them in the presence of God, and let's see what happens.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, I think that's powerful, and I think that's something that anyone can do, right?
Right.
As believers. I remember coming to Roosevelt Street as a new believer and getting invited to lunch. I remember having lunch at Pastor Carey's home, Grayson's home. I think that's something that I'm not sure along the way somewhere. We don't do that like we used to, but
right.
I think that is beautiful and so important that we don't just be in people's lives for, you know, these moments at work or wherever it is in the community that we're connected, but that there's fellowship, there's a breaking bread. There's something beautiful about that.
Yeah, it's biblical.
Yeah.
And I didn't see the kids as projects. I just saw it as, and I'm not saying I did this well all the time with every kid. You don't connect with every kid. But I would sit and listen to them talk about the pains of their lives, many of them so similar in what they were walking from. Mm-hmm. And so that just opened up an opportunity for us as coaches and as a family to just say, and it was a family. I mean, Ruth was very much a part of the mission of, okay, we're just going to love on these kids and we're going to help them where they need help. And hopefully, yeah, we would get better at basketball. But that wasn't the main goal.
Yeah.
Well, building relationships. I mean, that's the same thing in basketball or in church or anywhere else. In family, you mentioned that, you know, these girls, you considered them like part of your family. And that was just one of the things. Like inviting them for a meal, inviting them to church was just part of one of those things. Like you said, it wasn't that they were your project, but you were just letting them know that you care about them. And
yeah, I had had some coaches who didn't do that well, some that I played for. I had had coaches that I coached with also who didn't do it well, but a few did it really well. And when I saw that done well, it just opened my eyes even more to say, I coached with a guy in Pennsylvania, his name was John Waller. I've preached about him before. And he was so tough on our kids. I mean, they were tough, rough kids from South Philadelphia. But I just watched this guy while he was really hard on them, also love on them, open his Bible on a Saturday morning at practice and just share and cry with them and ask for their forgiveness. And so I saw that modeled well. And I would see years later, these tough kids, when they needed something, I knew who they went to. I watched it happen. They went to Coach Waller. They came to his house. They called him on the phone. He built relationship.
Right. Yeah. And people, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And it was because he cared that he was able to have those tough conversations, I'm guessing, with them.
Yeah. Yeah, he modeled it really well for me. When I was a very young coach, I went, oh, this is what this is about.
Right. Now, you talked about basketball being a ministry, but at some point, you felt that tug away from basketball to something else. Talk about that.
It was March of 2018. I had just finished my 13th season of coaching. I was weary in a lot of ways. And so I actually made a phone call to your dad. I didn't normally call your dad. I tried to leave him alone. He was pastoring a large church. And I figured, unless I really, really need this guy. So I just did. I needed to just have a conversation. And I said to him in that conversation, I'm really feeling a draw to full-time ministry, even though I feel like I'm doing ministry. Can you help me, talk me through this? What does this look like, feel like? Just would you pray with me about this? Essentially is what I was asking him. And he said, are you feeling a release from the current role that you're in? And I said, I am. And he said, okay, that's what all I need to know for this conversation. Let's pray about it. And little did I know that 2 months later, he was going to call me back and say, let's meet at Cracker Barrel and let's have a conversation. I didn't know that he was leaving his current role, and he asked me to join him back in Pennsylvania as his assistant to go build relationships with people. And that was a quick 2 month turnaround, going from here I am, a college basketball coach, to my pastor is asking me, hey, would you move you and your family back to Pennsylvania and let's go do full-time ministry, even though you don't or I don't know what that fully looks like.
So how did you break that when you got home?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting piece. I'll try to make this fast. I just told Ruth, I said, this is what he wanted to meet about. And, you know, we both cried because we already in that moment were feeling like, oh, man, this is a real possibility. It's one thing to think about something and pray about it on your own. But when somebody literally just walks in front of you and presents an open door, now you have to do something with it.
Right. Yeah.
And he and Brian Charette had written the book, and it was called
The Stress Factor.
Stress Factor. And at the beginning, three chapters of that book, it was on a young man who was working at a small liberal arts college, and he was trying to make a decision about going into full-time ministry. I had had the book for years. I had never read it until Memorial Day weekend of 2018. And I started reading that, and that Sunday night I called Ruth up to the bedroom and I said, you need to listen to a section of this chapter. I read her a few of the paragraphs, and the tears I looked up were just rolling down her face. And she said, I know what this means. And it was like in that moment, that night, we knew we're going to Pennsylvania. We didn't know what we were going to do, but we knew we were going.
And obedience, that speaks obedience to me. Just take the next step. We trust God for the future.
Yeah. I want to say this so this is clear too. It's easier to take that step when you at least know I got a salary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That helped me a lot. Now, Ruth didn't know what she was going to do. She had no job, and we're going to uproot the two kids. So, but it's still hard.
Right.
There was lots of parts of it that were hard, so I'm not patting myself on the back. But I also want to keep it real and say one thing that helped was I at least knew, okay, I at least have a salary, even though I don't fully understand what this guy's asking me to do.
Yeah. And so you all moved. And you became his assistant, right?
Yep. So that was 2018, and I was his assistant for roughly 2.5 years. COVID, of course, takes place in the middle of this. And my role was that I would travel from church to church and meet with different pastors and their staffs. And this wasn't my total role, but one thing I did was I would listen to them share things with me that they couldn't say to their spouses or they couldn't say to their staff. And we did a lot of other things, but that was a key role. But coming out of COVID, the church that I was attending, the pastor made the decision to leave. And Grayson's father, Pastor Carey, became our interim pastor. As a district superintendent, he can appoint himself as a pastor. Our church was hurting. They were in a bad place. everybody was struggling coming out of COVID on one level or another. So he became our interim pastor, and he approached me and said, I need you to pray about something because the Lord keeps giving me your name, and I just need to give this to you, and you're going to need to pray about it. And I was dead serious, but he laughed, and I said, well, you better keep praying, and you better ask him for some other names. So this conversation went on for several months, and finally, I guess it was the fall of that year, 2020, that I said, okay, I'm at least willing to engage in this conversation about possibly becoming the pastor.
Wow.
And just the timing of that, being able to have that time to think and to... The Lord can really work when we wait and let Him just speak into those things, into our hearts. And there's a place where you went to Pennsylvania, I'm sure not thinking that you were going to be the pastor of a church, but God somehow works all those details out and actually gives us that want to do what He's calling us to, which is wild to me.
Yeah,
I had always said I would never do it. I would never do it because I saw what my dad had gone through. And again, I didn't walk away upset or anything at the church, but I just had seen how hard it was for him at points. God has definitely been faithful. So there, I just never wanted to do it. And even through that process, I'm thinking, no, I don't want to do this. Well, then I finally got to the place when Ruth said to me, what are you waiting for? And I said, what? And she said, well, this, like, let's us just say yes and let's see what God does. We're saying no before we're even giving God a chance to do what He wants to do. So I sent your dad a text message and I said, okay, you can take my name to this church. And I fully expected them to say, that's a nice thought, but no. And I just thought, great, I'll be off the hook. But that's not what happened.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
So that was the fall. It might have even been 2021. That was the fall, and they had a board meeting, and he apparently had a couple names, and he hadn't given the names till the end of the board meeting, I guess. And after that meeting, it wasn't him that called me first. It was the board secretary. It was Kurt Brown, and he called me, and he said, hey, I guess you knew this phone call was coming. And I said, well, I knew a phone call was coming. And he said, well, it took all of 1 minute. It was unanimous. We all are on board. We said yes. And I was like elated and deflated at the same time. Because I was like, oh man, are you kidding me? I just thought, all right, well, the door's still open. Lord, I'm going to keep walking until you shut this. I just didn't expect it to be flung that wide open.
Yeah.
So I went in, and Ruth and I went in, and we met with them, and we interviewed, and then I preached a couple weeks later, and they voted, and that was the beginning of basketball coach becomes pastor.
Sounds like a good name for a book.
Man, yeah.
Is pastoring a lot different from coaching?
I think on
some levels.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of similarities to me. I think here's a real similarity: getting people from all walks of life to hit one target.
That breach.
Yeah. So that, regardless of their personal preferences, at the end of the day, I had to ask teams to lay all that aside and say, "All right, well, how do we get to where we're going to go?" And to me, That's a beautiful picture of how we get to unity, right?
Yes, right. Absolutely.
The church is an even greater beauty because it's only found in Christ. And when you're asking non-Christian people to do that on a basketball court, they can still do it, but there's a beauty when it's done and found in Christ.
Yeah. Right.
He's the one that designed it. So my dad used to joke with me and say, pastoring and coaching are a lot alike. There are two jobs where people who have never done them will often offer you their opinion on how you should do it.
There's a lot of sideline chatter, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So when you accepted that position as a pastor there at Ephrata, you became the pastor there. It was coming out of COVID. That's a pretty tough place to pick up a church, I would guess.
Yeah, our church was really hurting for a lot of different reasons. I mean, pastoral change coming out of COVID. There was a lot of things that, you know, that just, they just needed healing. And so all I knew is I felt like my number one goal, my number one call for the next year was just to pastor the staff. And I figured if God did something great in the room with our staff, then he would work out of that staff and do something great in the life of the church.
That's beautiful. Wow.
And so that's what I focused on and tried to really just build the health and the hope and the healing in that staff.
Yeah. Starts with the leaders, right? If the leaders aren't healthy, how's the church going to be healthy?
That's right.
You know, I remember being at Lead Deep this past year. And you were pretty new here.
Yeah.
And just looking at your staff sitting there, and it looked to me like there was great unity on that team. So I think from what I've witnessed, that became reality.
Yeah. We worked hard. I worked hard to get to alignment, you know, and the Lord showed us great favor in that we did have that. We didn't agree on everything, my goodness.
Yeah,
but when we left meetings, we committed to praying together and crying together and just being real honest. Now, it wasn't a staff of 40 people. So when you have 15 people, it's a lot easier. But it was still a very much unified group in why are we here? Mm-hmm. Okay. Once we settled on that, and they believed in me, then, you know, then our church, it just did start to take off. And it was because that staff modeled the way of, we're going to love each other well. We're going to pray for each other. We're going to care for each other well as leaders. And then it'll happen in the life of our church.
And you saw that lived out in your time there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was beautiful. We experienced great growth in a time when every national trend said churches are going in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I take credit for that. That's God did some amazing things. I tell everybody this. My kids were a big reason our church grew. My kids were heavily involved in a lot of the community, and they just invited their friends, and their friends brought their families.
Yeah.
Wow. That's powerful.
It's that simple, right?
Yeah. I wish.
A child shall lead them.
Yeah. They had no shame in that's a beautiful thing, too. I don't think I realized it at the time that while they probably still think their mom and dad are goofy and weird and old at points, they weren't ashamed to invite their friends into spiritual environments that they knew their mom and I were going to have a direct influence on.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful, too. So then you get another phone call.
God keeps calling you and asking you, will you trust me again, right?
February 14th. Mm-hmm. Of 2024, I was driving to staff meeting at my former church, and the phone call I got was just, hey, it's probably something you should pray about. And, you know, I'm not predicting anything's going to happen, but I just want you to know that I think that was somewhere around that date that, hey, you should at least start praying about this so you don't get blindsided with this. And I can't remember how much later it was than that I got another phone call. And that was from the district superintendent here, Dr. Fuller. And he just said, hey, would you consider, you know, just praying about this and let you and I talk in a couple weeks? And so at that point, I go home and I talk to Ruth. And it's like, here we go again. You know, it had just been 6 years. We had zero interest in leaving. We loved where we were. We loved our church. We loved the people. Yeah, and the process, it felt like here we go again, all over again.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. Today you've been listening to part one of Pastor Kevin Griffin's testimony. We invite you to join us next Sunday at noon, right here on 1470 AM and 102.1 FM WBTX for part two of Pastor Kevin Griffin's testimony. May God bless.
Hope Talks is sponsored by Church of the Nazarene in Harrisonburg in partnership with Sunshine Ministries. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcast. Your feedback helps us spread hope to even more listeners. Stay tuned for more uplifting stories in the next episode. Until then, keep the faith, share the love, and find joy in the hope that Jesus Christ brings.